Right, okay, our Friday panel joins us this week. We are joined by two of our TDs from the region, from Sligo Leitrim, Sinn Féin Deputy Martin Kenny, and in a moment, hopefully, we'll be joined by Donegal Independent Deputy Thomas Pringle. For now, Deputy Kenny is on the... Good morning to you, Deputy, and thanks for joining us. We'll hopefully have Deputy Pringle in a moment on Zoom. Well, just on that, Martin Kenny, you're coming under pressure from your constituents about... be it reopening church services or having football training resuming. What are your views on that?
Well, so I wouldn't say it's pressure. You know, many people find it a little bit difficult and find it hard to manage when they can't deal with people working, you know, trying to go to mass, trying to do those things. It's normal part of society, and it's not happening. It really has a problem for them, you know.
Yeah.
But having said that, most people recognise that we're in a pandemic, that we have to try and work our way through this. And it is difficult, particularly funerals are difficult. I know that myself. And I know it is very difficult to try and say to a family, you know, only a certain number can go to a church. But I think, you know, many of your comments coming from the people that have been contacting you, they are saying, you know, that if we have to be very careful, because if you open up one thing leads to another, and you end up with too many people congregating together, and it is a serious difficulty, you know. So I think really we have to go on the advice of the experts.
Yeah.
I think we also have to recognise that we have a big problem regarding the whole issue in regard to the vaccine and the rollout of the vaccine and the timing of that. And I think until we get that scaled up to a situation where we have more people being vaccinated, we're going to have a problem. And we shouldn't be opening things up too fast. That's my personal view.
Yeah.
Many people have a different view, and I do absolutely understand, particularly with regard to big open spaces like people out training for football or with people who are doing things in mass and things like that. You know, it is an issue that naturally enough people will discuss and debate that.
Yeah.
I think really we have to, in my view, bow to the expertise of the medical experts with regard to this, and it's the safest thing to do, because at the end of the day, you know, we can all have our view and have our opinion. But public health is really the issue that's here. I know people that have got COVID, have not been very sick by the time they had it, but have since then, for weeks now, have not been able to get out of bed for much more than an hour or two a day. And it is quite a serious illness, and we have to be very, very careful.
Right, I'll come back to the vaccine rollout in a moment, because a lot of people are asking legitimate questions in relation to the pace of that. Deputy Pringle, you're welcome, and thanks for joining us. Same question again. Are you getting any feedback from your constituents about reopening aspects of society, be they church services or sports facilities or even pubs or restaurants? What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, we'll be getting some messages around church services and different aspects of society. We haven't had much yet in relation to pubs out there, but I suppose the reality is that people want to get back at things and get back at it, but we have to be very careful. And I think the government really has a lot to answer for, because, I mean, they basically sold the whole vaccination program as being turned into a problem, and it's been solved from January on, when in reality the vaccines aren't being available that widely.
So therefore, the government is blameless then. Why criticise the government?
I don't think the government is blameless. I think the government is to blame, because the government dressed it up as being problem solved once the vaccines start. And the reality is the vaccines won't be effective until practically everybody has had the vaccine. And that's the reality of the situation. And the government has basically, they keep telling us it's been problem solved, and people have built up this expectation. You know, there's I think it's what, 10,000 people a week being vaccinated.
Yeah,
we need a minimum of about 3.5 million people to be vaccinated to get any kind of herd immunity or something like that there. So that won't happen, as Martin was saying. That won't happen until probably, like the government is saying, it's going to happen by June. I think it'll be a lot later than that, and I would be seriously worried that we would be looking and still in lockdown this time next year, and because basically
really?
The government
next year you were going to still
I wouldn't be one bit surprised. That's the sad thing about it. Like, I wouldn't be one bit surprised, because I think the government has continuously over-egged the situation in relation to vaccines and that, and built up people's expectations. And people's expectations are that everything should be okay now, and we should be ready to be reopened. And the reality is that enough people aren't being vaccinated, and they're constantly doing that.
Right, okay. Well, we read this morning that the HSE will miss its vaccine target for the second week in a row. There was a target last week of 100,000 people to be vaccinated, and apparently just 81,000 had the vaccine. Would you be critical, Martin Kenny, of the government, or do you put it down partly to the delivery schedule being delayed and the problems with AstraZeneca and so forth?
You know, there are problems with that, and that's where it is. But I mean, at the end of the day, the government has a responsibility here for to ensure that they roll out the vaccination as fast as possible to as many people as possible and prioritise certain groups. Some of that has happened, but, you know, and we're not critical for the sake of being critical. We're critical for the issues that have been, where people have been let down, where there has been huge fault particularly, I think, the rollout to people in medical services, people in carers are a big sector of people out there who really can't understand that they're not being prioritised for vaccination. And I think, you know, at the end of the day, the government has to recognise that the one way that we're going to get out of this mess is to ensure that we get the vaccination programme rolled out as quickly as possible, and every effort needs to be put into that. Now, I know that there is issues with getting a hold of the vaccine and getting enough of it into the country. And as soon as that happens, I think we need to see a mass rollout everywhere. And we need to see not, you know, a couple of thousand people a week. We need to see it run into the hundreds of thousands if we're going to have an impact. And that needs to happen fast. Government's responsibility in all of this has also been seriously damaged by the way in which we've seen some vaccinations been rolled out in places, and people who were not priorities getting vaccines, people who were in the priority camp been let down. You know, you have an awful lot of problems and mishmash and disorganisation. And that's really what is frustrating people, because everybody out there who wants to go back to mass, who wants to have more people at funerals, who wants to go back to sport, they all see the same thing, that vaccination is the way forward. And that's why the emphasis has to be on that right now.
Okay. Well, just before we move on, not so much you, Deputy Kenny, but I know your colleague, Deputy Piers Doherty, and indeed you, Deputy Pringle, have been accused directly in the Dáil of politicising this whole issue. Is that a fair criticism or not, Deputy Kenny? First of all, well, Tom, do you want to take that one? You've been accused.
Was it Fianna Fáil that said that?
I'm trying to remember. You had an exchange in the Dáil last week. Wasn't it with you had an exchange with Micheál Martin, as I recall, wasn't that it? And then Deputy Doherty had an exchange with Leo Varadkar last evening. And the accusation is that you, Deputy Pringle, and the Sinn Féin party are trying to make political gain of this pandemic. How would you respond to that?
That's typical of the government when they have nothing else to say and they can't say anything else. They'll accuse it of political gain. Look, the reality is the issues that I've raised in the Dáil are very serious issues for the members of the public in Donegal and indeed all across the country. Like, I mean, we talk about the vaccine rollout programme and that. Basically, elderly people who are housebound now cannot avail of vaccines, and the HSE hasn't even considered them yet. They're only trying now to actually draft a response on how they're going to be dealt with. So there's people in the age over 85 age group who can't leave their house to go to the doctor's GP surgery to get their vaccine, and they're being left behind because the vaccine rollout programme hasn't identified what they're going to do with it. Now, I'll raise that issue in the Dáil, and I'll make no apologies for raising it. Yeah. And if Micheál Martin has a problem with it, that's fine with me, because it's a Fianna Fáil problem. We'll have a problem with it, and that's grand. I have no problem with that at all.
Okay, I'm trying to remember the exact words you used last week. We played a clip that just escapes me at the moment. But
I can't remember them either, because I don't usually listen to them.
And I think that's what you said, that you don't listen to his responses. There was a bit of a war of words last evening, Deputy Kenny, in relation to the same issue, and Piers Doherty clashing with.
I know that there is always the rebuttal from government that when anybody criticises them on anything, you're making a political football out of this. The reality is that, you know, these are political issues. They are issues of policy, of how policy is implemented for the public good. And if policy is not reaching people, if people are being let down, if people have been left behind, then naturally enough it is the obligation of people in opposition for to criticise government and to point to those problems and to try and to resolve those issues. And, you know, for government to say you're politicising it, It is a political forum. That's what we're there to do. It's policy we're discussing. We're discussing public policy to deliver a vaccine, which is about taking people out of a pandemic and getting the country back moving again and getting back to work. That's what we want to do, and that's what we need to do. And, you know, for government to say that somehow or other it's the wrong thing to discuss those policies is quite farcical. I mean, we have no problem saying when government does a thing right, when they get the job right and does something well, that they should be praised for it, and that's what we need to see happen. But when they fall behind and when they fall short, naturally it should be pointed out to them. And that's simply what we do, and we make no apology for that. The reality is that most people are struggling very, very much in regard to this pandemic. They find it very difficult. Their lives have been in upheaval, not just from the point of view of where they're able to go, but also their financial circumstances. They can't get working. They have earned the pandemic payment. They don't know what their future is. Their banks and their mortgages are under pressure. All of those things are impacting their lives. And we have a responsibility to speak up for those people. We have a responsibility to try and do something about it. And as Thomas said, you know, government is naturally going to say, well, you're making politics of it. But it is politics. It is public policy. That's the issue that we're debating. And that's why we have to make politics of it. We have to drive home the message that the people deserve better. They must get this vaccine out there as fast as possible to as many people as possible and prioritise them to ensure that we can beat this pandemic and get the country back going again to some semblance of normality. And that's what people want, and that's why we represent people.
Right, okay. Well, let's get this one out of the way before we move on to other issues. It's been a good week for you. You get a nice little pay rise in July, Thomas Pringle. You're looking forward to that. You are.
I wasn't even aware of it until it was covered last week, and I actually gave up the pay raises that had been previously granted to as well. And when that comes in to be paid up, I'll be signing to give that up as well. But that's the reality of it. I mean, unfortunately,
so you won't take it, and where does it go then? Or
it goes back to the government,
right? But you don't have a choice about what it's used for or anything like that. No, you just won't take the pay.
No, and rightly so. I mean, it's wages, it's taxpayers' money. It goes back to the taxpayer. It goes back to the state, and the state disposes of it then as it sees fit.
Martin Kenny, nice little pay rise for yourself and your colleagues.
Yeah, I know there's pay raises coming. They're all linked to raises that were supposed to be coming under FEMPI and the resumption of FEMPI and all of that. Now, we in Sinn Féin have signed that we won't take those pay raises, and we haven't taken them up to now, and we won't be taking them. You know, that said, there's many, many people who are on the other end of the scale, who are on the lower scale in the public service and in other places that are waiting to get some restoration of pay and deserve to get it. And there's issues there that need to be dealt with. We feel that that's where the priority needs to be, not on the people on the higher end of the scale and the people who are in the higher echelons of public service or indeed politicians. You know, we need to restore public pay to the people who work on the ground in our hospitals and in our schools and in our health board and, you know, in the county councils, the people who are on low pay in all those places. They're the people who deserve to get some bit of a break and a restoration of pay, not people in the higher echelons. That's my view of it.
All right, okay. Neither of our guests taking that pay rise. That answers a lot of questions coming forward from listeners this morning. Can I ask you your opinions on one of the big national stories during the week, the Gordon Elliott controversy, the photograph of the horse trainer astride a dead horse, and he is due before the Irish Horse Racing Regulatory Board this morning. Thomas, what are your views on that, or where do you stand on, I suppose, animal cruelty issues? I was going to say, where do you stand if you consider it an animal cruelty issue? A lot of people don't consider it an animal cruelty issue, but what did you make of the story?
It's a pretty shocking story. Now, I actually haven't seen the photograph, and so I don't know how bad the photograph is particularly is or that there. But, I mean, it's pretty shocking that somebody who makes their livelihood from horse racing and from making horses perform to their best should be photographed in such a way with a horse that has passed. Actually, I think it was sitting on the horse, making a phone call or something like that there. I mean, which is in really bad taste and has to be investigated. It seems that the photograph was a number of years old. I'm not sure, and it's horrible, and it should be investigated. And particularly when you consider too that the state supports horse racing to such an extent, and horse and put so much money into it as well. I think it does have to be looked at, and horses and people in charge of horses should be treating animals with a lot more respect, and that has to happen.
Okay, so we don't know what's going to come his way this morning, but there has to be some sort of harsh punishment meted out, you think?
Well, yeah. I understand Horse Racing Ireland, he's had a hearing today or something like that there with Horse Racing Ireland, and that'll be dealt with at that. I presume it'll be dealt with at that anyway, and that it'll be dealt with effectively. That's going to be important.
Okay, Martin Kenny, what did you make of the Gordon Elliott controversy?
Well, I think it was in bad taste, you know. The photograph was not something that I'm sure Gordon Elliott is proud of, or indeed anyone in the horse racing industry or anyone involved or has an interest in that would be happy to see. It was a most unfortunate, terrible incident for Gordon Elliott to be involved in. Having said that, I don't think Gordon Elliott has ever been convicted or accused of cruelty to animals. I don't think any of the people who have had racehorses in his stables have ever suggested that there has been any cruelty or any issues around that. And, you know, we all can make mistakes in life, and I think it was a terrible, terrible bad mistake for Gordon Elliott to make. He's paying very dearly for it. The fact that it has come out now only a week or two away from Cheltenham, I think, is another issue. The reality is that, you know, the horse racing industry in Ireland has a lot of questions to answer, and there is a lot of public funds going into it, and all of those things need to be dealt with. But I do think that, you know, at the end of it all, there has to be due process and there has to be a mechanism to look at all of this and see what is the situation and what is the reality of the situation. And in fairness, I don't think Gordon Elliott is a person who would be cruel to his animals. I don't think any of the people who work in that industry are, you know, overzealous in regard to how they treat their animals. They treat them generally very, very well because they want to get the best out of them, because they want to make a lot of money out of it. And a lot of this is about money and about the betting industry and about all of that. And there are issues there which are separate that need to be dealt with and need to be looked at in their totality. But I hope that the process that Gordon Elliott goes through today is fair, and that it's looked at with some degree of measured reproach to it, and to understand that, you know, people can make the most terrible and wrong mistakes, and a photograph captures something at a moment in time. It doesn't mean that that person has always been like that. And I would give him a break in that respect, and maybe that's just me. But I do think at the same time that if there are issues of cruelty, and anywhere there are, and that they can be proven and can be shown, they need to be dealt with in the harshest way possible.
Right, okay. 0719118104 is our number to call this morning. You can text or WhatsApp to 083-3500-530. And there are lots and lots of issues that people want you to discuss and give your opinions on, and hopefully we'll get to some of those before the end of our session this morning. But again, it's been a week of decimation of banking services, hot on the heels of Ulster Bank announcing that they were withdrawing from the Irish market. We had the Bank of Ireland announcement of 88 bank closures as soon as September, and of course the North West has been as badly hit as anywhere else. Several branches in Donegal to close, including Bundoran in our franchise area, Drumshambo and Manor Hamilton to close, Tubbercurry and Ballymote. Thomas Pringle, would you criticise Bank of Ireland for doing this, or does it come down to just money and economics?
I think it's you have to criticise them for doing this, because particularly there's two aspects to this. I think one is that in the middle of a pandemic to be making these announcements, and you know, where basically people aren't able to react or are able to get moving about to maybe get alternative employment or something like that there. And there has been people aren't allowed, or the state is saying that people shouldn't be made homeless during the pandemic, but surely they shouldn't be made lose their job. Their Bank of Ireland shouldn't be able to take advantage of this pandemic to make this announcement. And I also think that I don't think it was a surprise, is that it came on immediately after the Ulster Bank announcement as well, because I think Bank of Ireland probably took advantage of that, and it would make it easier for them to actually make this announcement.
Be less of an outcry. Is that what you feel, that people were sort of resigned to?
I do think so. I think that was a very big part of why they did it, and I think that's regrettable as well. You know, because, and as a double blow for many people, that, you know, that, and there's no doubt that banking is changing and that the banking system is changing, but at the same time, these banks have a responsibility to the communities that they represent, and that they are proud, we're happy to make money off the back of, and they have an ownership and a responsibility to them as well to ensure that they can stay as long as possible, but if not, that they handle the situation properly. And I don't think that in the middle of a pandemic is the right time for the bank to be making these announcements.
Okay, but if it's the case, and you have to believe the bank, that there are significant more numbers of people not going into, physically going into bank branches, banking online, then why would they keep them open? I mean, they're keeping the ATM machines apparently, so no point in keeping offices open or branches open if nobody's physically going into them.
Yeah, that's right. But the reality is that the high street element of a bank is very good publicity and does. I mean, it builds up the sense that people have of ownership and responsibility and the sense of belief and trust that they've had in that particular bank. And I think that the high street role plays a bigger role. I mean, an awful lot of bank, people's bank and stuff like that there was done and would be through commercial loans and stuff like that there, where a lot of the business and the profitability probably of banks would have been outside the high street element of it, and that's why they're obviously making this decision. Mm. But I think that high street element actually lends more to the credibility of the bank and the loan offerings that they can make. And the other side of it as well is that Bank of Ireland we're still the largest shareholder in AIB Bank. We are, and Bulvin Bank of Ireland, we're still a pretty big shareholder as well. And they should have a responsibility, and we should be able to have our voices heard in terms of the bank maintaining the services. Look, the services will change, but I think it didn't need to change at this time. And I think they took the opportunity of the news of Ulster Bank to ride on the back of that to lessen the blow for as far as they are concerned.
All right, okay. Well, can you ask the deputies what they're actually doing about the downsizing of rural Ireland? No Bank of Ireland in Tubbercurry, Charlestown, Ballymote, Bundoran, Manor Hamilton, Drumshambo, after us bailing out the banks. Why aren't they protesting in the talking shop, the Dáil, Martin Kenny? How would you respond to that? Are you protesting about this?
Well, we are indeed protesting in the Dáil, and it has been raised a number of times this week by people from across the opposition, including Piers Doherty and others. And, you know, the reality is, Thomas is right, they are using the closure of Ulster Bank, but they're also using the pandemic as an excuse to say that footfall is down. Of course footfall is down. People are under restrictions that they can't travel 5 kilometres from their homes. Most businesses are closed. Of course they're going to be a drop in the number of people using the local banks. But for the towns where those banks are, let it be Tubbercurry or Bundoran or wherever, it's not just the people in the town, but it's the surrounding area where people come in to do business in the bank, and then they also spend a bit of time in the town and spend money in the town. When that is taken away, it causes a huge problem. And it's another blow to rural Ireland. As your caller said, it's an aspect of commitment to ensure that we can put investment back into rural areas, into the provincial towns and the provincial areas around the country. That's not happening. A recent Central Statistics Office report showed that in the Northwest, that the household income across the average of the country was over 20% below in the Northwest. So people are, by and large, restricted in the amount of income they have, restricted in how they can do business, how they can move forward. For a lot of businesses in the towns that use the bank for to get their change, for all of that, you know, they're in turmoil. They don't know what's going to happen. And it is a huge problem. Now, I have taken an initiative along with Piers Doherty and others where we're holding public meetings on Zoom next week across the constituency. I'm holding one for the Sligo area along with Thomas Healy for Ballymote and Tubbercurry, and one for Leitrim along with Councillor Brendan Barry and Pádraig Fallon for Drumshambo, Manor Hamilton. And I'm also holding one in the area in Bundoran with Councillor Mickey McMahon in regard to try and give people a voice in regard to all of this, and to start a bit of a campaign around it, to not say we're going to allow it to happen, that the government has to have the pressure put on them. They are 14% shareholders in Bank of Ireland. This taxpayer put €4.7 billion into Bank of Ireland to bail it out, and now we see it being repaid by pulling these services away from small rural towns. It just isn't fair and isn't right, and we need to make sure that we can put a maximum pressure onto the Minister for Finance to intervene in this, to ensure that these closures don't happen, at least until this pandemic is over, until we get to the end of next year, until the end of 2022, then review the situation and see where we go from there. Because it's simply totally devastating for small businesses in these towns that have been closed for the past 12 months to say that when they reopen, there's not even going to be a bank left in the town. It's a huge blow to them. And I think government needs to recognise that and step in here and use their influence as large shareholders, this bank, for to keep the Bank of Ireland open in these small areas.
Right, okay. We move on from there. A lot of reaction to the Gordon Elliott story, which we hadn't actually covered at all during the week. Can you give Gordon Elliott a break, lads? He suffered enough. And all your talk about mental health in the past goes out the window. It was a moment of bravado. We all make mistakes. The media have been way over the top on this. Someone else says, I just pray for Gordon Elliott and his mental health. People have done worse. like that story you reported this morning about the wee lamb. Will they be hounded or even caught for something like that? And someone else says, in relation to you, Martin Kenny, can't believe you have an excuse for Gordon Elliott. The only reason he said he made a mistake is because he was caught. Well, I do think you did condemn what happened, isn't that it?
But look, I think the photograph was terrible and put out all the wrong image. But in fairness, he has not been charged with or convicted of cruelty to animals. And I think until that happens, we can't say that he is cruel to animals. I think the photograph was a mistake. And we all know farming and know what happens in rural Ireland and in areas where there's animals. Unfortunately, they die and have to be put down sometimes. And, you know, it was totally wrong and totally stupid of him to behave in that way. But does it mean something that should end someone's career or someone's end their livelihood? I don't know. That's up for others to judge, but it certainly isn't for me to judge or for people in the public to judge who don't have any influence on this or don't have any real knowledge of the situation on the ground.
All right, okay. Someone else says the two lads seem to have a very, very cosy relationship this morning. Is there something going on that we don't know about in relation to future political arrangements? And someone else says, why don't Sinn Féin and the Independents form a government in future? Well,
you didn't vote for us all. You get a form of the government.
no doubt that has been tried. Thomas, you want to comment on that? I know we've talked to you about this before. I know the general election is the furthest thing from your mind a year on. But do you have a difficulty if you were ever in a position where you were offered to go into government with Sinn Féin, of which you're a former member? Do you have any ideological difficulty with that? Or have you thought about it?
We held talks with Sinn Féin after the last general election with a view to forming a government ourselves. Myself, Catherine Connolly and Joan Collins, and also the People Before Profit, Socialist Party and stuff like that there, we had negotiations with Sinn Féin in relation to that. At that time, it would only have ever been a minority government that could have been formed. But then, as people know, the COVID outbreak came and put an end to that, and Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael formed a government along with the Green Party and went into power. I do believe that there has to be an alternative, and that alternative has to exclude Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael, because, I mean, in reality, is since 1922, one or other of them has been in power at one stage since then, and we are where we are. So if we want change, and if we want a real change, it has to be to make sure that Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael aren't in government. And as I said to you before, and with your listeners, there's no way that I would support either of them to be in government. So the obvious option from that then is to look at an alternative, and I think an alternative of left-wing independence, left-minded independence, Sinn Féin, the Green Party, not Sinn Féin, the Social Democrats, the Labour Party, and whatever remnants of the Green Party may be left, if they can build any credibility from this, that will could provide an alternative, and a very credible alternative, to Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael.
Okay, well Thomas referred there, Martin, to the exclusion of Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael. I get the sense, and I'm sure your party get the sense, that some TDs within Fianna Fáil have changed their minds on the official stance adopted by its party in relation to a possible coalition with Sinn Féin. Is that the way you're looking at it within your party, maybe in future, that if and when Sinn Féin are in government, it'll be with the support of Fianna Fáil? That's, of course, to get the numbers, but what are your thoughts on that?
Well, I don't know. You know, I think Fianna Fáil has fallen in the polls, and certainly from their support base on the ground, there's a different attitude to the attitude of their TDs in Leinster House, or many other TDs in Leinster House. But quite apart from that, there is a general view among the public, in my reading of it, that they want a government that is different from the past. They want to break with the past. They want to break with the old regime that has been there since the foundation of the state. And they look to that as being without Fianna Fáil or Fine Gael. Now, what will happen after an election is a different story, and we all have to live with the realities of it. And unfortunately, we have to live with the reality of the last election as well, where Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael came together for the first time to form a coalition government. Of course, they had an arrangement before that for the previous 4 years. But, you know, it will all depend on what number of seats is gained by parties on the left, by progressive parties and by progressive independents. And we're certainly open to do an arrangement which is about having a break with that past, about having a new Ireland, having a new way forward, and breaking with the old politics of Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael, which for certainly in my view and in the view of many people out there, is a stale government, is a return to some version of the failed past, which has let down so many people for so long. And I think, you know, most people out there recognise that it's time for change and it's time for to give others a chance. And I hope that when the next election comes, that they will prove that that can happen.
All right, OK. This person has rang in. A very, very angry listener, I'm told, by Margaret, to say that the government gave millions to the horse racing industry, but gave nothing or very little to support farmers. Instead of babbling on this morning, deputies, this listener wants to know what is their opinion on this, and is there enough being done to support farmers? Presumably in the current crisis, or they might mean just in general.
Yeah, it is a serious issue, and horse racing industry and the greyhound industry gets 80 million a year of government, and much of that money goes to prize money for the horse racing industry, and that's inappropriate, and there needs to be a very serious examination of all of that. We all know that sometimes government goes in and assists certain industries, but there is issues there. Now, the farming industry does also get a lot of taxpayers' money and a lot of money from Europe, and you know, there's various schemes and all that in place, but oftentimes it goes to the wrong parts of it, and there needs to also be a reassessment of that. And my colleague Matt Carthy is very strong on this, on ensuring that, you know, the farmers that are on the worst land, that are working the hardest, that are putting the most into it, get a better return for it. And we would certainly be of the view that I would simply agree with your listener on that point and respect their view and respect.
Okay, would you agree with them, Thomas, that angry farmer?
Yeah, I mean, the government has always been wedded to this idea that the horse race in Ireland and the greyhound industry have to get this 80 million euros a year, every year, regardless of anything else. And they say that that's supporting jobs and all that kind of stuff there, and the government will say that. But there is no doubt that farmers need to be supported, and it's particularly farmers who are in difficult land and have difficult land quality and stuff like that there. And they are going to play a huge role in the future in terms of you know, with climate change and stuff like that there as well, because they will have a lot bigger role to play than any of the large farmers down the country, and they need to be supported, and we need more ambitious grant schemes, and we need a redistribution of the payments that we get now at the minute to ensure that the farmers and the smaller farmers and that they are supported adequately to maintain themselves and their families, and also maintain the environment for the greater good as well.
Right, okay. I want to ask you about St. Patrick's Day. We've got a couple of minutes left, and I'd be interested to get your views on this. I mean, usually on radio stations such as ours at this time of year, there people are fighting about politicians travelling abroad. This year we've had people fighting about politicians not travelling abroad, as has happened. Martin Kenny, our national holiday, what do you feel of it, and the whole concept of virtual St. Patrick's Day parades and the holiday itself? How should we appropriately mark our national holiday this year?
Look, I think it's back to the reality of the fact that we're in a pandemic. You know, I think last year on St. Patrick's Day, Leo Varadkar was Taoiseach at the time, or caretaker Taoiseach. He was in New York, I think, when he announced the first lockdown. And we're in a different place now. I think we have to recognise this year, St. Patrick's Day, by and large, the big drinking session, the big crowds in the towns, all of that can't happen, won't happen. We have to have, you know, some kind of a marking of the day, but I don't think it can be the same. And what we should be doing is trying to make sure that we protect the health of the vast majority of people and lives of people, that they're all with us next year to have a better St. Patrick's Day than we can have this year because of the pandemic. And we should adhere to the advice that's given to us with the experts.
Thomas Pringle, how will you mark St. Patrick's Day, or how do you think people should mark our national holiday?
Yeah, look, I mean, it's very difficult, and it's the second year now that it's been changed because of the pandemic, and I think we should be marking it, and we should be setting out to mark it to make sure that it won't happen again, and that's the way that it should be marked this year. Look, in reality, we have to. The safety of our communities and the safety of our elderly people and the safety of everybody in society is a lot more worth more than one St. Patrick's Day, and that's the way we have to look at it. And I think we have to do everything in a responsible way to ensure that there's no difficulties and people don't have any difficulties from it. And and I think we have to make sure then that we don't be in the same situation again next year, and that's the most important thing. And to do that, we need a change of government policy. in relation to how they're dealing with this pandemic, and we need the government to react properly and to not be.
Okay, I think we just got cut off with Thomas there. He's just
selling what they're trying to do, and I'd like to say like this.
Right. Okay. I missed the last part of that. We got your general point. All right. Okay. And you know, it's the second. I'm just wondering, finally, to get Martin's opinion. And Thomas has twice said in his interview about this time next year, he hopes that we won't be in a position this time next year, but probably suspects we will be. Do you have more hope than that, Martin Kenny, or not?
Look, I'm forever optimistic and hopeful of things, and I certainly would be hoping that by the end of the summer, coming into next autumn and winter, that we'd be in a much better position, that we would have at least 2/3 to 3/4 of our population vaccinated. And if we're in that position, we'd be in a stage where we'd be starting to you know, resemble some sort of normality again and get back to something closer to normal. But that doesn't mean that people can have a free-for-all then either. I think we still have to be careful for a considerable length of time, even when we get the vaccination rolled out to its maximum. But the sooner we can do that, the sooner we can get back to a position where people can have their lives back, where business can get open again, where we can get back to some sense of normality. But I would certainly be saying, you know, you're looking at Halloween at least before we can get that to happen.